Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. And it's not a competition, but like if it was, I would totally win the season with Wayfair. Giant outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments in every style and color, yep, got those on Wayfair. Garland, accent pillows, cozy throws, nutcrackers, Wayfair, Wayfair, Wayfair. When it comes to hosting, Wayfair's got me covered there too. I got a brand new dining table set that fits the whole family, sheets and towels for extra guests, and even the cutest holiday bed sheets for the kiddos, all thanks to Wayfair. And the best part, I got it all shipped fast and free. It's a Wayfair holiday miracle, y'all. I'm not saying there's a champion of Christmas or anything, but if there was, it'd be the lady with the year-round Christmas village who shops at Wayfair. That would be me. For everything festive and just your style, all delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or download the Wayfair app to totally win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hello everybody, welcome to Talking in the Rain. I'm your host, Sada Unju, and today my guest is singer, songwriter, jazz musician, Terrell Edwards. In this episode, Terrell and I get into the first time he felt like he was at home when he was on stage and how he got started in this profession. We also talk about how he was not discouraged to pursue this, even though he wasn't encouraged by his parents at first to keep doing this. We also get into the differences when it comes to performing on different stages on tour, in different venues in different countries, versus performing on the same stage when he was opening for Jay Leno for 3 years in Las Vegas. We also talk about what keeps him going and what he hopes to achieve when he is singing on stage. He is currently on his unforgettable tour, sharing and celebrating the iconic sounds of Nat King Cole, Louis Armstrong, Ella Fitzgerald, and more. And you can catch him perform at the Envil Theater in New Westminster on October 25th. If you're in California, he's going to be there for California Christmas on December 6th. And if you want to see more dates, you can go to TerrellEdwardsMusic.com. And I hope you enjoy this episode.
Terrell Edwards is my name, and I guess performing is my game.
I ask all of the artists, like the musicians that come on here, if you have a song, an album, or an artist that you've been listening to lately.
You know, I kind of bounce around. I listen a little. Now, this is straight out of left field, and you know, but there was a group in the 60s called the Loving Spoonfuls that I've been listening to. I mean, I never even heard of them before, but I've heard of their music. You know how sometimes you said, no, I never heard of these guys. And then someone pops on the song and says, oh yeah, I know the song. Well, one of my friends has just been, he's now the guitar player for, you know, kind of the reboot of the Loving Spoonfuls. And I was like, I never heard of these guys. So I started listening. I said, okay, I know that. So the Loving Spoonfuls.
what kind of music do they do?
You know, it's like, you know, like in the 60s and 70s. I mean, I don't know if there really was a genre. You know what I mean? I mean, it was like, I don't know, rock and then everything else. But country, I guess country's always been around. But I don't know what to call it in the 60s. That's just hippie music or something. Can I say that?
Yeah, that's totally fair. Also, another music thing I wanted to ask you, as a jazz artist, I'm mm-hmm. sure you know more jazz artists and songs than most. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask if you would have some recommendations of artists or songs that you love and you think that they represent jazz and that people should check out.
Well, you know what, Sarah? I mean, I I'm kind of grouped into the jazz thing, and then adult contemporary like AC, and then classic soul. They kind of all go together. And I guess my common denominator is all of those. I mean, I'm really partial to that 70s era music where, no, I mean, nothing to take away from the great artists that are out right now, but it was just a different thing. It was just the work ethic was different. Yeah, you can hear some of the real authenticity, organic emotion in that 70s music. And so, guys like, Frank Sinatra and guys like Nat King Cole, Sammy Davis Jr., I'm doing a lot of Rat Pack stuff here, I know, but Bing Crosby, I mean, that stuff really, it just really touched me, and then I could go a little further, and like the Marvin Gaye's of the world and Sam Cooke, those were real, touching songs that they left behind for us. And that's kind of why I do what I do. I mean, it's not, I mean, I'm a songwriter. I mean, I write a lot of original music, and for myself and others. But that song, that music is so rich to me. And I never take the approach to improve on greatness. But I'm my own person, and I have my own interpretation of a song, and I end up doing different arrangements, but still keeping true to the authenticity of the song that I'm covering. Yep, that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I feel like authenticity really is important. And you can tell when you're watching on stage too. When it comes to your writing original music, is authenticity the most important to you when you're writing? What are some things that are important to you that you pay attention to when you're writing?
Truth, just real truth, man. The if I'll give you two examples. I mean, there may be I may wake up in the middle of the night. I've got this song or these words in my head, and it comes with a melody as well. And I may write that down, and I may be able to further that later on in the day. But it all comes out from a real sincere place, I think. You know what I mean? And so it's easy for me to just stay on that path, Whereas if someone asked me, "Hey, Terrell, can you write a song about, I don't know, maybe a TV theme show song or something?" And I was like, "Okay, well, what do you want it to be about?" Is what I need. I mean, I can write a song, but I mean, if it comes out of somewhere, if it comes out of left field and there's no real substance to it, it just doesn't feel right for me as a writer to say, tell me what you want me to write about, because then I can even just refer to some things in my own life. Everyone experiences something. Nothing's really new under the sun, right? So, and then I can, based on my own experiences and maybe some friends that share some things with me, then I could write a song that just pours out truth. And then people are like, yeah, I can get with that. I understand that. You know what I mean? So
I think you make a great point. I was talking to like someone else, a film writer, and she was talking about how the most universal stories are the most personal ones. Because, as you mentioned, like, yes, we have different lives, but we do all experience very similar things in life, actually.
joy, pain, you name it. I mean, and of course, we've heard this several times before, but some of the greatest songs comes out of pain. You know what I mean? And actually, some of my best songs, in my opinion, came out of some pain I had in my life. I mean, well, I mean, whether it's a relationship, which is everything, or someone else's relationship, which is still relationships. So.
So, are you doing any original, are you performing any original songs in your Unforgettable tour? Can you tell me about this tour a little bit?
Like I said, it's the Unforgettable. It's a tribute to great jazz and soul singers of all time. My experience, my point of reference. It's 2.5 hours. Can't possibly get all of my experiences in 2.5 hours, but I pick some the songs that I pick. They just have really good stories. Backstories about each song, so I get a chance to talk a little bit about that, with some of them that I like to really highlight. But it's, I mean, it's a to me, it's a great journey of just being able to look back at what these great artists have left us, a legacy of music that they left for us. And then, yeah, you're right. I get a chance to saying, now these guys have influenced me in a way that I'll be able to write my own songs. And, there's a pattern that I am drawn to as a songwriter, as a singer, that I could share some of my own songs as well. So I'll give you one in particular. I'm not going to give you the whole story, Sarah, because you got to come to the show. But there's a song that, I had a songwriter friend of mine. We were partners, and he fell in love with another friend of ours, another female friend, and she had no idea that that he was in love with her. And so, I was part of that. It's kind of a fly on the wall, and got a chance to write about it. So, I'll tell that story. It's a pretty good one.
Oh, that's so cool. I mean, it's always for me as a viewer, as someone who gets to sit in the audience and enjoy the show, I really do appreciate it when the performance has a story because I personally don't like listen to lyrics at
Oh yeah.
all when I listen to music. But then if I hear a story, it makes me, want to pay more attention and actually listen to the lyrics, and makes it a more engaging experience, I think. And
I agree with that. I mean, and for all of us, I mean, the music first draws us, right? And then it's like, okay, what is this guy saying? You know what I mean? But I mean, if you don't have any good, you don't have the, if the music is not on point, man, then, forget it.
oh yeah. So talking more about touring, you've been touring for a while now. And you like go to so many different cities. Have you had
You mean
so
country?
far, yeah, so different countries actually, yes. In your experience, do you see a difference in the audiences in the different countries that you perform in? And even though the show is the same, does that change the show experience?
It doesn't. It doesn't. Yeah, I mean, that's what changes is the faces that you see. But I mean, the emotion and the way the songs, the way the show touches people is the same. And to me, I mean, I've been tempted to change the show up, because I mean I've sang these songs like maybe 1,000 times, and my sax player's like, oh man, Terrell, please don't change it, man. I mean people love it. And the thing about it is I had to remember that they haven't heard it 1,000 times, you know what I mean? And so but I get a chance to share these songs, tell these stories, and it's absolutely the same. I mean, people are just seem to be really encouraged by the music. I mean, so I get a chance to, 2.5 hours out of someone's life, which is you can't get that time back. And I just find it to be a privilege to share a little bit of my life through these songs, to people who I've never met before. And when we walk out, I feel like, I've got 200, 300, sometime 2,000 new brand new friends, So that's a great thing.
Yeah, that's so cool. And I'm sure that the shows, like, there must be people who have not seen you live before, whose like first experience it is with you. And then I'm sure you put on a great show. I've seen videos and they like start keeping up with you, which is great. Do you feel the pressure at all when you're performing? As you mentioned, like, you're taking 2.5 hours out of someone's life. Does the thought of, oh, what if they don't like it, does that ever occur to you? Or, yeah, just curious about that.
Sarah, what great questions you ask. I think I think everybody experiences that to some degree. I mean, we all want to please everyone in a room. I mean even just daily life. I mean, if you can say, I don't care what anybody thinks. I mean, I don't think that's completely true. You know what I mean? I think so. Yeah, I mean, I would say, yeah, I mean, I do want people to walk away with a great experience. I want 100% of the people to walk away with a great experience. Is that going to be the reality? I don't know. Probably not, but I haven't had experienced any complaints. So I guess that's the way to look at it.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for saying I ask good questions. See, I feel like your version of putting on a good show is my version of asking questions.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, speaking of touring, you also did kind of the opposite of touring, where you performed on the same stage, the same venue, for 3 years when you opened for Jay Leno in Las Vegas. And 3 years, I feel like, is a very long time to be performing in like the same venue. And although the show might change from night to night in your experience, I assume it was pretty much similar. And then touring, you're going to different cities, different countries. Even though you're performing with the same people, you're not performing in the same venue. And so they seem like these two would be very different experiences for you as an artist. So I want to know what was the biggest difference for you? And did you find anything that was challenging going from the 3 year experience to the touring?
Well, you know what? See, when I'm on stage, I'll just speak from my own point of view. Like when I'm on stage, to me, it's a stage, it's a microphone, there's people out there, and I'm at home. There's smaller stages and there are much larger stages, and when the show starts, I'm at home, and I'm probably, I've heard people say this, and I believe it's true. I'm probably more myself there than I am anywhere. The challenges, and I've had this conversation with some of my other touring friends. The challenges are, okay, I gotta get up. Okay, all right, I need to walk down to the venue. I need to get on a plane. I need to sleep in another bed here. It's a different, in a lot of cases, like, we get paid for that. You know what I mean? Because when we're on stage, it's really fun. And 98.9% of the time is like we're absolutely in heaven. And so I don't. I will tell you this though, the very first time we performed at the Mirage in Las Vegas, I turned around, and even though I've done this 1,000 times, I turned around and something just said, "You're in Las Vegas," and I start having heart palpitations. I started hyperventilating, and just luckily, just before it was time to sing the first note, I calmed down as I was able to get it out. But I'm usually pretty good at just blocking out any other distractions. But if something says, you realize you're in Vegas, right? And I just panicked.
But I'm sure she still did a great job.
That was the first time. So it means 3 years later, we were still doing it. So I guess that said something.
That's true. So you said when I'm on stage, I'm at home, which I'm sure a lot of stage performers will agree with you, hence your dedication to the art and why you decided to pursue this professionally. So I want to know how this started. Like, do you remember the first time you thought you got on stage and you were like, ah, this is home for me, and I want to keep doing this my whole life?
Yeah, you know what? It was sixth grade. It was sixth grade. I mean, when you're in school and you have these musicals. I mean, you're in music class, and music teacher puts on. My dad was a choir director for many years and a really great singer. At that time, I mean, all I knew, basketball and football. I was just being a kid, and I didn't know that I had this, inherited talent. I really didn't think about it. I was too busy playing flag football. But there was an audition for a couple of principal roles in our school play, and the Temptations were being casted for this one part, and I got up and sang, and I got the lead part to sing the lead. And the reaction of my classmates, and the people in the room were just so overwhelming, way better than me playing flag football, because I wasn't that good anyway. Even though I was having fun, I was running around, making a fool of myself. But the reaction was just like, holy smokes. And I'm in sixth grade. So, and then I remember, I don't know where this gentleman is to this day, but his name was Father Brown. He was a Catholic priest at this Catholic school that I went to. And he says, you're gonna be a star one day. I'm in sixth grade. Now, I mean, how do you think that made me feel? I mean, they never said that to me about when I was playing flag football. I catch a ball, it's like, hey, you're gonna be in the NFL. That never happened. Now I want to hear that again. I want to feel that again. And it was that's a long ways away from where I am now, but that was the first kind of spark. That was the spark. Yeah.
I love that so much.
Yeah.
Would you
Father Brown.
say,
Hey, Father Brown, wherever
Father
you are.
Brown? Father Brown, thank you. Did your family encourage you after this to pers like explore singing and performing and pursue this?
Yeah, another great question. I think people need to hear this, because the answer is no, they didn't. Yeah, my dad, even though he was a singer, he loved to sing. He was a great musician, but he didn't feel that he could do this on a full-time basis and make it earn a living for his family. So he just did it at church, and he was passionate about it. But he got a real job, we call it. And I kind of tucked it away for many years. I had this thing because, I mean, I didn't see anyone doing, my immediate community doing what I wanted to do. And I went through high school, and after I got out of high school, and that was a pivotal point too, because I actually started getting from a high school teacher, Mrs. Haywood. She also encouraged me to, continue to sing. And I got a call. I mean, I got a letter from Berkeley University, and they were wanting me to come there and sign up for their music program. went to my dad and I told him this is what I wanted to do, and he says, you need to come up with something else. He says, you need to learn a trade or be a pharmacist. I'm like, pharmacist? What are you talking about? You mean the guy at Walgreens that gives me my medication, gives you and mom a medication? I was like, so, and so I joined the U.S. Navy. I mean, if because if my parents weren't into it, I was like, well, maybe they got a point. And I joined the U.S. Navy. And one thing happened after another. It was actually a good thing because I learned business. And when if you ever get a chance to, my experience at least was in the military. I got some training that I didn't know I needed, and some of that was in the business sector. So when I got out, guess what though? I still had this burning desire to be on stage and be a singer and be a songwriter. But now I had some experience in being a businessman, which is what you need. I mean, because it's called the music business, and it's called the music business for a reason. And so that began my journey when I because I got out now. I didn't need my parents' approval. I just needed to believe that I could do this, I also knew that it was gonna with the level of expectancy, I was always expecting to have, be the next whoever, next, superstar. But I was realistic in knowing that it was going to take some time. So I just wouldn't give up. I became pretty, tough-skinned because, you're going to get some, there's going to be some times where, you're pouring into this and you're not seeing anything coming back. So, and I just would remember listening, watching a couple movies and seeing a couple things, and these little phrases would stick out to me, like Rome wasn't built in a day, and what one man can do, another man can do, and that's from Braveheart. Things like that would stick out to me and encourage me to just keep going. Well, I mean, because of that. That led me to meet several people that led me to meet another person that led me to meet, lead me to meet Jay Leno. You know what I mean? That's what, 20 years later, and now, and all of that led me to now talking to Sarah. So, I mean, well, hey, one step in, the ladder has those rungs for a reason. The stairs have those, don't miss out on the steps. I mean, we all can learn so much if we just kind of be patient, just trust the process, persevere. That's been my story. So,
That's really impressive that it wasn't discouraging for you, both your parents saying no and then joining the Navy, and you still came out of that saying, "Yeah, I'm actually going to pursue this." That's really impressive.
Well, I mean,
Yeah.
even when I joined the Navy, they were like, "What? You're doing what?" I was like, "Well, I didn't ask them that times because I just knew they were going to say no." So, but it all worked out, I think one of the stories, one of the lessons is that, if you persevere, it'll work out, and you're going to probably learn some things along the way that you didn't know you needed to learn.
That's really true. Perseverance is really the key. Did your dad get to see you perform before he passed away?
Yeah, he did. He did. My dad. Well, I moved to Edmonton, and my parents were living in Mississippi at the time. So I moved to Edmonton, and really, then that's when I actually met Jay, and Jay was flying us to Vegas to perform for him there. But in Edmonton, things were really starting to pick. I became a producer and a songwriter, mostly doing production for other nonprofits, for other organizations. They put on these fundraising events, and so and then I was also asked to sing at some major productions. Well, getting a little notoriety in the community there. That lends to some perks that you get. And my dad came to visit. This is several years later, and he'd seen me before, but he seen at what level that I was working at the time. And he'd walk into a room, and I'm on stage, and I say, "That's my dad." And 30 people flood him after the show talking about how they loved his son. And at the end, I remember going back. He says, "Son, I want to tell you that, I back then I discouraged you, but I was afraid that you would, not make it, and I just didn't want to see you disappointed." Well, that's a good father, but
Oh,
on with the show.
yeah,
But
that's so sweet. I'm sorry I kind of brought the
well, I mean, this is kind of a good story, I think, in that,
Yeah.
my dad had every good intention, and but what he really didn't realize was, I was watching him persevere in some other things, and it was that energy that also, well, that's dad's life. This is my life, and I need to apply what I've seen him do to what I want to do. So the principles of, being a good person, being a hardworking person, being true to yourself, all those things I saw my dad do. And so I just became him as a singer, as a professional musician.
That's amazing. And I read that you launched the Spread Love campaign dedicated to him. Can you tell me a bit more about this?
Yeah, I mean, this, I pretty much preface it right now. I mean, this is what I've seen. I've seen my father just make people feel good all the time. Now, don't, I mean, don't get me wrong now. So, I mean, back then it was okay to get we had like a, if you got in trouble, you got the belt. I just felt like my dad was probably like the best dad you could ever have. He's the best dad I could have ever had anyway. And I've just seen him, really put a smile on someone's face when they didn't have a lot of they didn't have a lot of confidence in doing something. He would give them confidence. Sometimes he had more confidence than the person than they have for themselves. What I learned from him, he didn't necessarily know he was teaching me, I just said, you know what, th this is the legacy that I think my dad left is really inside of me, how I can continue on how I saw him treat people throughout his life.
That's amazing. And I don't know, I feel like if I was in your shoes, it would give me more n the push, I guess, more reasons to keep performing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world. There's a lot of distractions, going on in the world, man. And we could easily focus on the negative, but I got this saying, that like if we were all, dark, in a dark place, there's plenty of room for light, you know what I mean? And so, and then we have to be thankful for the darkness, I guess, because the light can shine. So we have to, like it's just us chatting, you're allowing me to be able to tell my story, and hopefully someone is in, encouraged by this. It could be better, but man, it could be a whole lot worse.
That's very true. So I actually quickly kind of want to go back to the tour a little bit. I read that on top of you singing, you can also play the saxophone, drums, and the piano. Do you get to show off these skills on your tour, or are you just singing?
Sometimes I may jump on the piano and do something. It all depends. And to be perfectly honest with you, I got such great musicians now. They're way better at what they do than me just kind of, visiting those instruments every now and then. I play the piano more than I do anything because, I got a piano sitting right here. I don't know if you can see it, but that's because I write songs with it and I got a guitar right here, But I'll just, like for a guitar, I might just play one song just to say, okay, yeah, I did it, but you may not want to hear me sing, play four songs. Sarah, I'm like, stay in your lane, Terrell, stay in your lane.
No, do what you want do. Do you have a favorite song that you love to perform?
Yeah, I've got two, but all of the songs that I perform in my Unforgettable show, I've got like about five or six different shows, but this is actually by far my most favorite. But there's two songs. One is A Change Is Gonna Come. It's by a guy named Sam Cooke. You should listen to it. It's just soul stirring. And then the other is by the Righteous Brothers, first recorded by Al Hibbler in 1956. It's called Unchained Melody. That's one of the songs that's actually on one of my projects, actually called Unchained. The next project was called Unforgettable. And so I need to come up with one more un. Hey, Sarah, Unko. Unku, you?
That's kind of funny. No, my name's not as impactful as Unchained or Unforgettable, unfortunately. My last name means someone who sells flour in Turkish.
Oh, see, that's nice.
That's funny. Do you want to remind everyone what cities and dates you have left on your tour, and if you have any other projects cooking that you want to mention, maybe?
Well, if you're in the California area, December 6th is California Christmas. It's a full production of singing, dancing. I got a lot of my LA friends that join me, a lot of household names that you would know. But if you're in the city around December 6th, I know some people are flying in, come to California Christmas. But you know what? More important than that, and I'm just super excited to be at the Anvil Theater, in New Westminster, visiting some great people once again, for the Unforgettable show. So don't forget that one. October 25th is the date. You gotta be there.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on here. I really appreciate it taking the time out of your day to talk to me, Terrell. And also, is there anything that you want to talk about before we go?
Yeah, I wanted to say thank you to the city of New Westminster. I want to say thank you to Massey and Anvil Theater, and the person that put this all together. I mean, she's phenomenal. Rona is incredible at what she does, and I'd like to thank you as well.
Oh, thank you so much.